Hi, my name is Bob Sander, and I'm a professional storyteller. For over 30 years, my repertoire has included a group of personal narrative stories. Some of these are childhood memories, stories lived when, well, basically when I was a knucklehead in training, so to speak. Other stories come from my college student era, and still others date from my time as a beginner parent. And you know, by then I was kind of a professional knucklehead. While I do tell personal tales that are, well, either too risque or too this or too that to include here, you know, if you come to dinner some night, we'll eat and drink and I'll spill the beans on all those stories. But this collection, this bunch makes the cut. So I hope you enjoy them. And as for truthfulness, well, just know that these stories are absolutely 100% as true as I can make them. Enjoy. When I learned that my fourth grade teacher's name featured the word hell in it, it occurred to me that the school year might not be a bed of roses. And I was right. Evidently, Mrs. Heller had been a teacher for a long time. How else could a person develop such a good aim with a piece of chalk? Dare to talk to her in class and zip! Tiny yellow missiles found the side of your head with unerring accuracy. And though her aim was excellent, her locator system was frequently in error. Many times, kids in front of me or behind me talked while I was the one that got the chalk. Or it was the opposite, and I would talk and they got the chalk. When we would say, I didn't do it, he did it, she would answer, it doesn't matter if it wasn't you. You all talk out of turn sometime. It all averages out over time. Which reminds me, this gives us a perfect opportunity to talk about the law of averages, and she'd have us crank out some math book. And then she'd launch into a full-throated discussion of averages, and I guess I have to admit, if good teachers need the ability to relate subject material to real-life experiences, well, you can see she had that in spades. Up until that year, all my grade school teachers had been kind, accommodating, good-natured, patient, young, and female. Mrs. Heller was only the last of those things. On the other hand, her stern, demanding, even harsh approach was probably good academically. She forced us to think critically, dig deeper, try harder, reach higher. You know, you got the idea. It was like eating canned spinach. You ever had that? Supposedly it was good for you, but man, did it taste bad. Mrs. Heller was the tallest woman I'd ever known up to that point in my life. Her skin was as alpine white as her high, piled-up hair, unless she got mad. Then her cheeks splotched in an amazing red flush of tiny veins like little spider webs. She was big-boned and powerful in a way that reminded me more of the neighborhood men than any teacher I'd ever had. When she marched us down the hall, I noticed that even the few male teachers, they all deferred to her. You can see how we all just lived for recess, lunch, and dismissal at the end of the school day. We were continually looking up at the sweep of the old analog second hand as it passed around the clock face there above the door. If we thought our loving gaze might convince that clock to speed up, we were sorrowfully mistaken. Our efforts only attracted the attention of Mrs. Heller. Soon afterwards, we came to school one day to find that the big clock over the door was just useless because it was now hidden. Over it hung a sign that said, "Time is passing. Are you?" One day in the middle of the school year, our principal casually strolled into our classroom and detonated a bomb. "Boys and girls, two new students are going to join your class for the rest of the school year. I'll be bringing them down in a few minutes." This shockwave jolted the class like an electric current. A grade school class is many things, but first and foremost, it's a collection of kids who must knit and weave and fight and finagle themselves into education's equivalent of a flock of chickens. So can you kind of remember that process? It takes a bit of time to establish, you know. It usually gets hammered out by the end of the first month of school, but even then, even after the pecking order is established, some parts still rub occasionally, you know. Friction still going on. It's a fragile thing. Good teachers know this, and they handle it with kid gloves. Introducing new students changes everything. It's like throwing gasoline onto gently glowing coals. The whole thing's likely to blow up. Sensing our mood, Mrs. Heller snatched up several pieces of chalk and looked at us menacingly. "They just moved here from Ohio," said our principal. "The state just to the east of us." Ohio? He might as well have said Mars. They were foreigners. This was wonderful. Exotica like this heightened our sense of impending disorder and chaos, which, after all, might throw a welcome monkey wrench into the killing boredom of daily routine. "They are twins, and their names are Ronnie and Rosalind." Twins! Oh, my God, that's too much. What if twins from Ohio were like twins from Siam, which we'd seen in a picture in Collier's Encyclopedia? Those were physically joined together at the waist or the shoulders. Oh, we all looked at each other, giddy with a range of possibilities. Oh, we just couldn't stand this titillation much longer. Mrs. Heller quelled the mounting storm. She stepped in front of the principal. "Thank you, thank you. Bring them down whenever you're ready," she said, and thus ended his inflammatory announcement with her impressive body mass. Our principal was the most formidable person in the school, except when he was here, in Mrs. Heller's room. Here, in the inner sanctum, her powers trumped all. "I want you to make them feel welcome. You will do that for me, right, students?" he asked, as he backed out of the classroom. "Yes, sir," we squeaked in that dutiful, mousy tone children are taught to use before authority. Yet, deep inside of us, a caged, beaten-down hope yearned for something, anything spontaneous and unexpected and exciting to come along. The next 10 minutes took a year to pass as we eagerly waited to see what would happen. Click, 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 he was coming. Our principal's hard leather heels rapped smartly on the tiled hallway floor, telegraphing his approach. We tortured ourselves into that perfect, stiff, upright, seated posture that looks so good in a class photo, but which, in real life, is never used by any kid or adult anywhere. We were as rigid and expectant as little puppets. "Boys and girls, say hello to Rosalind." The principal stood in the doorway and curled his index finger for Rosalind to join him. She came in, stood by his side, and regarded us. We regarded her back. It was easy. She was cute, really cute. At least that's what fourth grade me, and probably every other boy, thought. How do I know we all thought that? Kind of easy, actually. If Spider-Man was Marvel, and Superman was DC, and A.J. Foyt was the greatest 500 driver, which they all were, then Rosalind was cute. Fourth-grade boys don't know much. They don't know many truths reliably. But about this, trust me, we knew. "Hello, Rosalind," we all sing-songed back in answer to the principal's command. She smiled ever so slightly, a demure, maybe even a coy look on her face. Her short, bobbed brunette hair and squared shoulders looked both feminine and strong at the same time. Mrs. Heller told Rosalind to pick either one of the two vacant desks to sit at. It so happened both of those were just behind me. So, of course, I fervently hoped she would choose the one immediately behind me. I'm thinking right away, she's going to sit right behind me. I'll bet she'll be my girlfriend. I know she'll be my girlfriend. I mean, why wouldn't she want to be my girlfriend? To look nonchalant, I assembled my mouth into what I thought must be devil-may-care pose. The net effect was an idiotic grin. Though my back hurt, I also maintained the weird upright position.
Sit here, yes, yes.
Nope. She chose the one furthest back, put in a blank space between us. Now, there would always be a space between us. Unless, maybe I could talk her brother into switching seats. I had comic books that I would gladly give in trade. Something to think about. Meanwhile, the principal was already coming back down the hallway with her brother, Ronnie. But now, two sounds signaled the approach. One was this. Click, 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 went the principal's heels. But this time, it was accompanied by something else.
No, 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 you cannot make me go in. I'm going back to Ohio right now. Let me go. I want my farm and my horses. I'm not going in there. You can't make me. Let go of me.
Whoa, this was going to be interesting after all. The principal appeared in the doorway with a firm grip on Ronnie's shoulders. He was trying to propel him into the classroom. Ronnie was equally determined not to enter. Ronnie's arms and legs were up against the door jamb. He was resisting with all his might. Strictly speaking, this was not truly armed resistance, but it was as close to it as a kid can get. Our knee-jerk reaction was spontaneous and predictable. We began to cheer Ronnie on. Faster than you could say detention, a blur of yellow chalk missiles flew in all directions. Something like calm was reestablished. Ronnie's efforts couldn't stand up to the force of a full-grown man for long. Once forced through the doorway, his energy just faded away. I watched as his shoulders crumpled, his head went down. Mrs. Heller came over and escorted him to that one remaining seat just behind me. He immediately put his head down on his folded arms. He did not look up, nor did Mrs. Heller press the issue. Class, say hello to Ronald.
Hello, Ronald.
We said it, but we kind of sounded morose. We couldn't help it. It's disheartening to see one of your own get the short end of the stick.
Well, said Mrs. Heller, now there's no need for me to explain to you two new students what my chalk boxes are for.
Very good. 10 minutes later, during reading time, Ronnie still had not looked up. I thought for sure Mrs. Heller would throw chalk at him to make him sit up and look around and pay attention, but she never did. Suddenly, I felt a tap on my shoulder. Not wanting to risk a chalk strike, I turned and looked at him in silence.
I gotta go to the bathroom,
he whispered. I answered,
okay, go ahead. I don't know where it's at. Wham! Ow!
Cried Glenn, the boy seated across from me. Fortunately, Mrs. Heller's radar had failed again. I raised my hand.
Miss Heller, this boy has got to go to the bathroom, and he doesn't know where it is.
Well, it's almost lunchtime. Can't you hold it until then, Ronald? A minimum of talk about bathroom process. That's acceptable. But going into details about bladder control... Man, that's pushing it for any kid, let alone a new one. Ronnie kind of hid behind me, and he didn't answer. I took it upon myself to ask him the same question. He shook his head no.
He says, nuh-uh, he can't hold it.
All right, Bobby, you go with him and show him where the restroom is. We'll be down in a few minutes. It's almost lunchtime. Wait for us by the drinking fountains when you're done, and be quiet. Ronnie was quiet on the way to the boys' bathroom. But as soon as we got inside, he said to me,
Hey, I really don't have to go.
You don't?
No.
But you told Mrs. Heller you did.
Yeah, I know. I just said that. I wanted to get here before everybody else.
You did? How come?
As an only kid, I kind of appreciate privacy in the bathroom. I thought maybe he had the same inclination, but I was wrong. He said,
No, there's this thing I know how to do. It's really funny. It's really funny. It's so funny. Come here, I'll show you.
And he walked over to the toilet stalls. I just sort of froze in my tracks.
No, really, he said, come here. It's a scream. I'll show you.
Well, what is it? He lowered his voice to a confidential whisper, and he said,
you ever see an 18-foot-tall man on the toilet?
What? There's no such thing. That's stupid.
No, it's not. I did it at my old school, and when the rest of the guys came in and saw it, they were just rolling on the floor laughing. Come on now, they'll be here any minute. You got to help me. We got to work quickly.
We? What do you mean, we?
Well, it takes two to do this.
Here's how it works. I'll sit her on the toilet stool. I mean, my pants will be up. I don't really have to go or nothing. But I'll swing my legs back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Meanwhile, you put your right, yeah, that foot right there. You put your foot on the toilet paper holder, and then your other foot, that's it. You put it up here on this little coat hook thing, and your head and your shoulders are going to stick up way above the top of the stall. Now, when the guys come in and look at us from the side, it's going to look like one big old giant man, 18 feet tall, sitting on the toilet. They're going to laugh their heads off. This is going to be great. Are you ready?
Not really.
Well, wait. We'll get in trouble.
No, we won't. It's just for a couple minutes. What could go wrong?
You know, kids do cost-benefit analysis with only partially functioning balance scales. I mean, the brains aren't fully formed, right? And therein lays the downfall. On one side of my scales, I could easily imagine an enormous number of quite tragic consequences. But on the other side, a few moments of hilarious merriment. So the choice seemed clear.
Okay, let's do it.
Now, just as I attained that top position for our little presentation, we started to hear the boys coming down the hall for lunch. The bathroom was their first stop.
Oh, yeah. I didn't tell you. This is the most important part. It won't work unless you do this,
said Ron. There's more?
Yeah. When the guys come in, you got to clench your face and your eyes tight shut, and you got to grunt like this. And it'll look like you really got to go.
Are you kidding me?
Honest to God, it doesn't work unless you do that. Hey, here they come. Come on, hurry. We got to go. Let's do it.
And just like that, the first mob of guys streamed into the bathroom. Down below, Ronnie was pumping his legs back and forth for all he was worth.
Do it! Do it!
He implored with kind of a hiss. I groaned, as if all I'd eaten the day before was a huge quantity of White Castle's finest.
The first wave of boys hit the deck in just seconds. They were in hysterics. Little writhing bodies literally blocked the doorway.
Behind them, the remaining boys propelled forward with their overwhelming curiosity. They pushed the helpless, laughing human blockage to one side until they, too, saw our construction, our 18-foot-tall man on the toilet. They crumpled instantly. Ronnie and I laughed so hard, tears streamed down our cheeks. But we did not stop. We couldn't. It was just too good. Everyone laughed. It seemed no one could resist the mega tonnage of humor presented by this tall, tall man grunting on the toilet. Now, unfortunately, this assumption was not totally true. I couldn't see very well because of the tears in my eyes, but at some point it dawned on me that the only laughter I was hearing now was mine and Ronnie's. I wiped my eyes with one hand and took a look. There wasn't a boy in sight. It was just our principal, standing in the doorway. Now, as if I were jotting down shorthand notes for a history quiz, I remember thinking, principal does not laugh. I'd only been in a couple of minor auto accidents in my life, but I agree with the odd phenomena other people who've been in accidents describe. Events that take mere seconds to occur seem to unfold in slow motion, and this was like that. In slow motion, the principal's brow creased into a deep, dark furrow. A dull glow slowly backlit his eyes. It took about a decade, but he rolled up his sleeves as if preparing for battle. And then he walked towards us. I froze the first moment I saw him. I tried to look as if my current position was really nothing out of the ordinary, that this was the way I always used the toilet. But down below, in position number one, still wildly pumping away, Ronnie's laughter echoed off the walls.
Quiet! Quiet!
I was kind of moaning through my teeth the way a ventriloquist might.
"What's wrong?" gasped Ronnie,
barely able to speak for all the hilarity. In the movies, that moment when the principal flung open the stall door would be a jump moment. But let me tell you something. The slow reveal is ever so much more terrifying, which is what he did with the stall door.
Creak. "Boys," he croaked in a barely contained voice,
"what are we doing?"
"Oh, not much," ventured Ronnie.
When we got into the hall, the principal grabbed a hold of my left ear with his right arm, and he grabbed a hold of Ron's ear with his other arm, and began leading us down the hallway to the office.
"Where are we going?"
Ronnie asked under his breath. I knew our ultimate destination, and he did not. We trailed out behind the principal as he towed us, one ear in each hand. The specific commotion of our class looking on, as well as the general furor of other classes going to lunch, surrounded us. Kids gaped the same way antelope do as they watch a lion grasp their cousin or their uncle in its jaws. "Phew," they say, "I'm glad that's not me."
"We're going to meet Mr. Paddle,"
I half-whispered back. Mr. Paddle hung on the principal's wall in his office. It was visible through the glass hallway window, a clearly displayed threat. It was wooden. Oak, if I'm not mistaken. 1.5 feet long by 5 or 6 inches wide, probably 1 inch thick, with a tapered hourglass handle on one end. Small holes were drilled through the paddle body. The principal once told us why the holes.
"Boys and girls, there are 2 reasons for the holes. One, those holes are going to make it hurt even more on impact, and they will make little red marks on your bottom for a few days to remind you of what you did. And not only that, but 2, I've discovered that as air passes through them, if you swing it fast enough, it makes a wonderfully frightful noise."
Our principal was justly proud of his expertise in corporal punishment. When one of the kids asked if that was actually 3 reasons, the principal just gave a mild grin and stroked Mr. Paddle 1 time or 2. After that, there were no further questions. Of course, I could not explain all this to Ronnie at that moment. My mind was engaged in a frantic ransack of all the possible explanations I could put together to rescue us from what lay ahead. It did not look very hopeful.
This looks like real trouble.
It was Mr. Knapp, the 6th grade teacher. His class was outside at recess. He was just coming out of the teacher's lounge. The principal stopped.
"You've got that right. Do you know what I caught these boys doing?"
"No, no, I don't. Tell me the whole story. I've got to hear this. I bet it's a doozy," said Mr. Knapp.
To our relief, the principal released his vice-like grip on our ears. Like useless lumps of clay, we listened as he recounted the saga of the 18-foot-tall man on the toilet. It seemed far less humorous when he told it than the actual event as we remembered it. But I noticed the mere act of telling it accomplished something important. The principal focused less and less on us and more on the story, both his part in it and how he told it now. As this went on, we felt more like innocent bystanders and interested listeners than the perpetrators. There were even 2 distinct moments in the story when Mr. Knapp smiled and chuckled, and the principal joined him. I had a thought. It's like air was passing out of an invisible balloon. I knew it was happening because I could hear it, but I couldn't quite put my finger on where this balloon was. When the story ended, the principal looked at us doubtfully. I don't think he really wanted to mete out our punishment anymore. But the wheels of justice were already set in motion. You know how that goes. He didn't know how to stop them. He reached out for our ears.
"Wait a minute," said Mr. Knapp. "Is this one of the 2 new students? One of the twins?"
Twins? I'd completely forgotten about the twin business. Instinctively, I glanced at Ronnie. Obviously, he was not conjoined at all. From the strictly prurient standpoint, this was a disappointment. On the other hand, we'd read how twins separated by great distances nevertheless claimed to feel each other's experiences, pain and such. I wondered if, back in Mrs. Heller's room,
Rosalind would start to cry in a few minutes as Mr. Paddle found Ronnie's behind. Funny how the mind attempts to divert itself from dire stress. Yes, his name is Ronnie. Huh. Mr. Knapp knelt to be at our level, something a teacher even today could learn to do with profit. Ronnie, do you know anyone at this school yet? Silence. I bet you don't know anyone in this whole town, am I right? Ronnie nodded yes. Well, it is scary, coming to a new place and all. I know that for a fact. My family once moved when I was little. Mr. Knapp lobbed a question at the principal. Did your folks ever move around when you were young? The principal nodded. Huh. You know, I can understand how you might want all these new kids to like you right away. Maybe you thought the best way to do that was to do something really funny. That sixth grade teacher. He was a good one. Ronnie didn't say a word. His eyes were shiny wet and his lip quivered just a touch. Unless you were down at our level, you would not have seen that. Mr. Knapp continued. But there's an important rule you need to learn in this life. We all live by it here in this school. Once you learn it, everything's going to go a whole lot smoother. I noticed the principal leaned in close to here, too. Probably, I thought, he wants to be sure Mr. Knapp says it the right way. The rule is, said Mr. Knapp, one to a stall. At that, Mr. Knapp roared with a great big belly laugh. And suddenly it was like being back in the bathroom again. The principal laughed, and Ronnie laughed, and I laughed, and we all laughed for nearly a full minute. Mr. Knapp said, you suppose we can let this fellow off this time? If he promises not to do this kind of thing again, I mean, you will promise, right, Ronnie? Of course he did. Whatever else being a twin entails, being nuts is not a requirement. Well, I'll make an alliance for it, just this once, the principal said. Go on back to class. So we started to go back. But there was one last moment left in our little drama for that day. Not so fast, the principal stopped us. Ronnie, you're new here, but Bobby Sander, you're not new. What's your excuse for all this? Well, the obvious answer and the truth of the matter was I had no excuse. We all knew that already. This question was a formality that protocol demanded be asked, and once broached, couldn't lead anywhere good. Once again, we were all caught by the system. I racked my brain for a suitably slippery answer. It's my fault, said Ronnie. I promised him something in return. Of course, Ronnie hadn't promised me any such thing. Nothing in the world. This was likely going to be a dead end. But without missing a beat, Ronnie said, and you'll never guess what it is. I could tell by the look on the principal's face that the moment of danger had passed. All I needed here was just like a little fig leaf to get me out of hot water, and Ronnie was evidently going to provide it. We all leaned in close, me in particular, to find out what imaginary temptation had lured me astray. I promised him, said Ronnie, with a grin not unlike the look I'd seen on his sister not an hour earlier, that if he did this, my sister would give him a kiss. Those two grown men laughed so hard other teachers came out of their classrooms to see what was going on. Turns out it was the only time anyone could remember when actual tears came to our principal's eyes. Then they shooed us back to Mrs. Heller's class, where the rest of the fourth grade awaited us with all its trials and tribulations, and where 2 years later, good-natured, patient, kind, accommodating Mr. Knapp welcomed us into his sixth grade class. But at that moment, I did not laugh at all. I was too stunned, relieved, grateful, confused, and amazed. But more than that, I was hopeful, for I sincerely wished, in the way a knuckle-headed fourth-grade boy might, that the obvious lie Ron just told about that kiss might somehow be the truth. Now, how that fantasy wish both did and did not come true is answered in another one of my stories, a story called Basketball. But that's a tale for another time. And this story, fourth grade, ends right here. Hope you liked it.